Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, the sun did shine down on the Garden of Eden. And it also shone down on Super Tuesday this week, the earth-shattering turning point election where Joe Biden was released from the crypt of the dead. And we were told that this zombie is going to be, once again, a front runner for the nomination. I don't believe the results that I saw, we all saw coming in from Super Tuesday. And I two guests, Joel Siegel in North Carolina and Greg Palast in California, don't believe it either. So let's get right down to it here. We had votes in, about a dozen states. And surprise, surprise, the Democratic corporate candidate came out ahead, especially in Massachusetts. I don't believe it, frankly. I just do not believe that Joe Biden beat Bernie Sanders in North Carolina. I mean, in Massachusetts. And I'm dubious about other results. And we have the great master of election fraud and theft investigations, Greg Palast, on with the great organizer and activist Joel Siegel. So let's get right down to it. Greg Palast, what do you think about the veracity of the so-called results from Super Tuesday?
Well, I don't have opinions, and I was going to say I don't think, but I guess I have to think because I'm working for the Guardian USA right now. And okay. I can't tell you about other states other than California where I am right now in Los Angeles.
All right.
Because as an investigative reporter, if I ain't investigating it, I ain't reporting it. But I can tell you about Los Angeles and California.
Okay, and let's get the states here because
our
California is critical because California, of course, has the most delegates in the Democratic National Committee, and it doesn't matter.
That may be an understatement. 50% of the vote and 50% of the delegates were at stake in California. And I can tell you right now that Bernie Sanders, and I'm talking as a former professor of statistics, and I've got the numbers in front of me, that our estimate at The Guardian is that Bernie Sanders will be shafted out of 553,000 votes. And you go to Greg Palast.
553,000 votes?
553,000 votes. We figure that there will be about 6 million cast in the Democratic primary. And so it's a huge amount of votes and probably dozens and dozens of delegates he will lose. Now, let me explain the system, but if you want to see a 3-minute film about it, just go to gregpalast.com, GREGPALAST. And there's a little film, How Did This Happen? It's real simple. In California, 3.7 million people were sent ballots without the presidential election on it. The vast majority, about 86% of those people were shocked, dismayed, and confused by how they got a ballot without, where is Bernie? Now, I say, where's Bernie? Because some people say, where's Biden? Where's Bloomberg? And by the way, our calculations also showed that Bloomberg was the other victim of this scheme. We figure he lost about 382,000 votes in this. Now, what happens is that California has this really unusual system. It doesn't exist in any other state where you have 5 million voters who are registered as what we tend to call independents, but in California called no party preference, NPP. And so the no party preference voters have the right legally and by Democratic Party rules to vote in the Democratic primary, kind of. But good luck trying. It's almost impossible, at least by the numbers. Now, I'm going by the data given to me by Political Data Inc., which is very, they work for both Republicans and Democrats, and they have direct and special access to all the California voting and registration data. And what we got from PDI is that 3.7 million ballots were sent to the independent voters. And by the way, Bernie Sanders has a vast lead among independent voters and Latino voters, Latinx voters, who 1 million Latinx voters registered no party preference. And the vast majority of 18 to 24-year-olds, the other Bernie Sanders demographic, also registers almost entirely no party preference, a couple million. Almost, in fact, the vast majority of 18 to 24-year-olds. Now, that just shows the inadequacy of our educational system because they thought that they could vote in the Democratic primary. You can't. Here's what you have to do. 5 million voters were sent postcards last autumn in California by Alex Padilla, the Secretary of State. This is Padilla, very frankly, I've worked all over the country, you know, facing down people like Brian Kemp of Georgia, the GOP, purge in general there, Chris Kobach in Kansas, Catherine Harris in Florida. There, none of these people reach the vote suppression expertise of Alex Padilla, the Democratic stooge in charge of Secretary of State, excuse me, his official title. Stooge is just his job description. And he has made sure that the Sanders voters will don't get their votes counted. He is campaigning heavily for Joe Biden, and in 2016 he campaigned heavily for Hillary Clinton. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not a Sanders voter. I'm not a no one voter. I'm just the reporter. Okay, I'm just giving you the numbers, guys. So all these people got these ballots without the presidential. First, they got the postcards. It looks like junk mail. People throw them away. Only 1 in 9 voters return them. Mostly older white voters return those cards. And they get what's called not a Democratic ballot, but and I got one called a Democratic crossover ballot. You are not entitled to a Democratic Party ballot. In California, you can only get a Democratic crossover ballot if you are a no party preference voter. Now, remember that magic word, crossover. So people don't return the postcards, so they don't get, so they got the wrong ballot. Now, there's a little space on the wrong ballot, the one without the candidates. If you're looking carefully, you can fill it out and write in, sign your name, and get that Democratic crossover ballot. If you mail in that your wrong ballot and get it back, about 8% do that, and they 8% do not get their ballot back in time to vote. So they're out. They can take their ballot and go into a polling station. Are you ready for this procedure, Harvey? They can take their ballot, go to a polling station, and exchange that ballot, but they have to bring in the ballot, the NPP ballot, and the envelope. The woman in front of me lost her vote because she didn't bring in the envelope. You can exchange the NPP ballot for a Democratic crossover ballot. Now, understand that throughout California, except Los Angeles decided to ignore the rules, even though it's state law, bless L.A., if you come in, you have to surrender that ballot, and you have to use the magic word crossover ballot. I want a Democratic crossover ballot. If you're in Orange County, if you're in San Diego, and if you're in Santa Rosa, and you don't use the word crossover, they won't give you the Democratic Party ballot. You're not allowed to have it. And they can't suggest it to you. They're muzzled. They've been told that it's against the law. If someone says, I want to vote for Bernie Sanders, give me a Democratic Party ballot, they have to say, you are not entitled to a Democratic Party ballot because you're not a Democrat. If they know the magic word crossover, they can get that ballot. This is, so therefore, what we've done is taken the information from PDI. And so what they did is they did a massive poll, a really sophisticated poll of the NPP voters, of the independent voters, and said, do you know how to get a ballot? About 47%, about half, said they have no idea how to get the correct ballot, exchange their ballot. About a third thought that they had no right to exchange their ballot. Like they thought, well, I'm out of luck. I got the wrong ballot. I can't vote the Democratic primary. They don't know if they can exchange it at the poll or mail it back in. And like I said, about 8% try and then don't get the ballot in time. So you have about 86% of the 61% of voters who want to vote in the Democratic primary or Democratic presidential candidate and are registered independent, and that's several million, can't get that ballot or don't know they can get it, don't know how to get it. The result, given that Sanders was pulling in 20, according to their polls, 26% of the independent voters, more than three times the Biden total, that therefore they lost their vote. It comes out to about 553,000 short for Bernie. And again, Bloomberg was the second favored candidate among independent voters. He was kind of Republican slash independent slash Democrat. And so older white people did like him and wanted to vote for him, according to these polls. And he lost over 300,000 votes that way in California. But Sanders lost 500,000, and that's devastating for the delegate count. And, of course, they're going to say, oh, Sanders didn't win as big as we thought. And I should tell you that we won't even know the count in California for 30 days because California gives out provisional ballots. A lot of people come in and say they're given, by the way, this is they're misdirected to provisional ballots. They'll ask for the Democratic Party ballot. And in some counties, they will give you that Democratic ballot, which you're not entitled to, but then they put it in a provisional envelope, and so it gets disqualified. And so you've got this complete crazy system, which they know screws independent voters. They know it. They love it. That's why Alex Padilla is Secretary of State, to make sure that your votes don't count.
God. Well, that's a modest opener for our show here. So what you're basically saying is that about 1 million voters out of the count here in California, what was the total vote count? How many people got their votes?
We'll have to take a look. Look, that's the other thing, by the way. Alex Padilla completely stonewalled The Guardian, stonewalled me. This is Greg Palast. And when I was working for Solana Rolling Stone in 16 and 18, he stonewalled me then on information. I'm going to have to take him to federal court. I just won a federal case against the Republican Secretary of State of Georgia. Federal judge I was awarded summary judgment. I don't even have to go to trial in my case against the GOP former Secretary of State. Now he made himself governor by bleaching the voter rolls whiter than white. Like I said, this is what I'm saying. It's so unusual. I'm usually exposing Republicans who are using racist Jim Crow tactics. But here in California, it's Jose Crow run by Alex Padilla, who is pretending to be a Hispanic Democrat.
Joel Siegel, you want to jump in on that?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm honored to be on the show with Greg Palast, who, I don't know if you remember the Steve Winwood song Sledgehammer, but he's Sledgehammer against
Voters. I'm not that old, Pete. I'm not that old.
You know, I'm a musician, so I have to use the musician analogy. But I didn't, you know, I understand now why he's been so successful, because I couldn't figure out how could a journalist do the work he's been doing, which is on a genius level. It's because he's a professor of statistics. That I didn't know that. I'm actually a professor myself, and so are you, Harvey. So we've got a bunch of progressive professors on the phone here. What I want to say is the bad news is that we've got a severely dysfunctional, flawed system of voting that is threatening our democracy. So you've got the Republicans who are using, and the far right wing, and I'm speaking as National Director of Justice Action Mobilization Network, so that's my hat I'm wearing today. You have the Republicans who, according to Greg, I believe, has purged 17 million people from the voting rolls since 2014. Is that right, Greg?
Yeah, that's from the Elections Assistance Commission. I can't say I counted all of them, the federal government.
So what Greg has said in The Guardian and other articles is that, you know, there are voter purges, and then there's a difference between a voter purge and updating the list. Majority of these cleansing of the list are purges of African Americans and Hispanics, and this is because of the very important Shelby case, right? Shelby versus Holder, where the Supreme Court decided that the 65 Civil Rights Act that people marched and died and bled for no longer mattered. And there's a section where you have to get what's called pre-clearance. So let's say North Carolina, where I live, wanted to do a voter ID. Before, you'd have to go to the Attorney General and you'd have to get preclearance. Well, now there is no preclearance because the right-wing Supreme Court gutted the 65 Voting Rights Act, and this is really, to me, the genesis of so much of what we're dealing with. Then you've got, and I've spoken to the, you know, at the highest levels of the Democratic Party. I asked them, what are you doing to fight voter suppression? And here was my answer. We don't really have a plan, which doesn't surprise me because I worked in the Congress for 13 years for the great late John Conyers. So I was the, you know, the activist progressive that went inside for single payer and jobs for all and everything. And what I noticed is that the majority of the time spent at the DNC was raising money for TV commercials, for the television commercials. But what I didn't see was the Democratic Party raising money for voter registration, to fight voter suppression, to make sure that the voting machines were modernized with paper ballot and what is it called? Optical? Is it an optical or a digital scanning? Is that right?
Digital scanner, yeah. Digital scanner.
So, well, leaves. Yeah, go ahead.
So, what we're seeing, what Greg is telling us here, is that the voter suppression for the Democratic Party occurs in the primaries. I mean, I think that the Democrats decided that because we have a president, an incumbent running for a second term in the White House who has dementia, that the Democrats needed to nominate a candidate who also has dementia, Joe Biden, so that we can have a level playing field. Greg, isn't that basically what you're saying here?
Now, I take the Fifth Amendment when it comes to talking about candidates. I'm really honest when I say I'm not supporting one candidate or another. I'm just literally reporting. And Joel brought up something important. The Shelby versus Holder case, that was the case in June 25th, 2013, where the Supreme Court basically gutted the Voting Rights Act. And because it applied, that is the section that applied to states with a history of discrimination. And we think of those states as Georgia and Florida and Mississippi. But also in that list of states which discriminate includes New York City and California. The state of California was under that order for its long history of Jose Crow operations, which and so they were California's relieved of having to protect the Latinx vote, and that's what we saw here. Basically, you have this huge following, which is almost not reported on. I mean, can I tell you something? I listened to MSNBC, just it's part of my job, no matter how painful. And sometimes I'm on it, in fact. and they just kept talking about how Biden had the black vote. By the way, Biden does have a strong following of African-Americans in the South, not in the North and in the industrial swing states. He's not popular in Wisconsin or Illinois or Michigan. But Sanders has the Hispanic vote, and that's almost never talked about. He's Tio Bernie. And so the Hispanic vote was at risk here, and they're not protected by the federal government anymore because of the Holder the Shelby versus Holder decision. The big thing, for example, and by the way, one of the terrible things is that to get a – you have to ask for a Democratic crossover ballot. One question is what is the word for crossover in Spanish that the poll worker can understand? There weren't enough Spanish language crossover ballots or English language crossover ballots so that you ended up with people, for example, our poll worker insider said, well, they were telling people, fill out a Democratic Party ballot and just put it in a provisional envelope. Well, that's going to be thrown out because if you're not a Democrat, if you're NPP, and you fill out a Democratic ballot, most counties will throw it out. Los Angeles had 66,000 Democratic ballots cast by independent voters in 16. They almost threw them out, but I will hand the recorder, Dean Logan, some props for making decision that the voters' intent counted, and these are mistakes by the poll workers, but literally hundreds of thousands. And write that down. Hundreds of thousands of votes were thrown out last time and will be thrown out this time because the poll workers gave people Democratic Party ballots when they were NPP voters, because they didn't know the rules. And so that makes those ballots, they get disqualified. To give you an example, did you know that in California, in 16 issued 1.3 million provisional ballots, disqualified 406,000 votes. That meant that California alone disqualified more provisional ballots than the entire rest of the nation combined. That's the great progressive Democratic state of California. We have the worst, I'm telling you, I've been around this country, and by pure numbers, vote suppression in California is higher than any other state, and not it's not even close. And that shocked me when I went through these. It's like, hey, wait, man, surfer dudes, vegan taco trucks, and we're not counting Latinx votes? What?
Well, and so the significance of the voter suppression and the flipping of the vote count by this elimination of Democratic voters in certain, shall we say, ethnic neighborhoods and with the predictability of their vote is really what's done to determine not the presidential election in the fall, but the primary choice by the Democratic Party of who becomes the nominee.
Yes.
Is that a fair assessment?
That's an important point, and it's not just California. As I've gone around the country, you do see people asking about, well, don't the Democrats do it too, you know, vote suppression? Yes, I find that in places like California, New Mexico, Illinois, other places, and what's happened is that the targets of Democratic vote suppression are the same targets as Republican vote suppression, that is young voters, voters of color, because it's a fight in the primaries. Democrats tend to want to suppress votes so that the incumbent elite can maintain their positions. And this is like really vicious in New Mexico. New Mexico, for example, is like California, a minority majority state. That is, not whites are in the minority, and yet Republicans keep getting elected in New Mexico because of the mass disenfranchisement of poor and of poor Latinx and American Native Pueblo dwellers by the Democratic Party. And so they end up, while they win the primaries for their candidates, they lose the generals. And so, yes, you have this unusual situation. Democrats do suppress the vote, but generally they're suppressing the vote of other Democrats, and that has a big cost in the general election. Obviously, California votes Democratic no matter what, but New Mexico has been swinging back and forth simply because of the way the Democrats treat their own voters.
We're talking with the great Greg Palast here, who has done the lead work since 2000 on the Bush v. Gore fiasco, followed by the Kerry v. Bush fiasco in 2004, which I reported on with Bob Petraeus. We also have Joel Siegel on the line, who has done a lot of the basic groundwork to protect the vote in North Carolina and in other places.
By the way,
Greg Palast. Yeah, go ahead.
Harvey, just one quick thing. I have to take off here because I have another deadline, but I am thrilled to speak with you, and I know that Joel Siegel, you have to understand, this guy has been on the front lines since forever, working with and for John Conyers. So,
you,
I mean, it's wonderful to be on the line with him, and I'm going to get off.
Let me ask you, before you jump off, let me ask you one question.
Okay.
And without taking a partisan stand, what was the impact in 2016 and again in 2020 of the manipulation of the vote count and turnout in the Democratic primaries in 2016 and now in 2020?
Okay, now let me put on my professor statistics hat. You had 8.6 million people cast ballots. Only 7.3 million votes were tallied for president. We had 750,000 provisional ballots. Almost all of those were the NPP voters who asked for Democratic Party ballot, couldn't get it, or got a Democratic Party ballot, so it's made provisional and then was rejected. And I can tell you this, PolitiFact said anyone who says that that Sanders really won the primary in California in 16, that's just a lie. The only way that would be true is if the NPP voters, the independent, no party preference voters, were favored Sanders 2-1. In fact, they did favor Sanders by more than 2-1. According to the Golden State poll of NPP voters, they favored Sanders over Clinton by 67% to 29%. That is well more than 2-1. And those are the ballots that were disqualified. Sanders, if you counted the ballots that were disqualified, if you let people vote who were turned away, Sanders not only won 16, he crushed it in 16. And so this is a problem. Again, it's not whether I'm for or against Sanders. This is pure numbers. And as I've said, the second victim of this vote, the shenanigans in California, the second victim was Mike Bloomberg. And, you got to recognize that it's not just they're not just going after Sanders. They and obviously Bloomberg was a target because it cut into the Biden vote. But what I'm concerned with here, and as we go forward, is that and Joel, I hope we'll have an opportunity to talk about this, is the vote suppression techniques all over this nation, which are racially poisonous. And in Wisconsin, in Ohio, obviously, in Georgia, which, by the way, Georgia is a minority-majority state, just turned a minority white. The white people are in minority as of this year in Georgia. Why is that a Republican state? It's only because of the mass wipeout of black voters. So I want to put this in perspective. I'm not letting the Democrats off the hook in California. What they've done and what they do is ugly. But when we go nationwide, look out for these racial vote tactics and stay in tuned if you want these reports. Obviously, I'm writing for The Guardian USA, or you can pick up my reports and see this three-minute video. Please pass it around at gregpalast.com, GREGPALAST.com. Thanks.
So is this, as you go, Greg, is this reporting now available at The Guardian? Is it online? Is it in? Where can people read your stuff about this primary? Hello? Greg? Okay, I think Greg is gone. Hello, Greg? No. Joel, are you still with us?
I'm always there, as Ronnie Laws, the great saxophone player, would say. I'm always there, yes.
Yes, well, that was quite an earful. Okay, we'll have to cut that sound. Very good. Thank you, studio
boy,
in New York. All right, so Joel Siegel,
yeah.
Now that you're, if you want to pick yourself up off the ground from that report from Greg Palast, tell us, can hear about voter suppression in 2020.
Sure. I'll leave off where... where Greg left off. I'll just get started. So what I'll do is I'll just basically kind of quickly outline the various tributaries of voter suppression and why our democracy now has been hijacked. And you use the word a Trump dictatorship. That's exactly correct. We're in a far right wing dictatorship. Very distressing about the Democratic Party shenanigans. I will say that there was a major cable news network. I will not name the name, but from a very senior person there told me that when Hillary was running against Bernie, this network told their employees through a via memo, if they talked about Bernie Sanders in a favorable light, they would be fired. Now, this
and
is really...
That is not Fox. You're not talking about Fox.
No, I can't name... I cannot name the channel. I'll just say it wasn't Fox. It was a major... cable station, very popular, where the memo was sent to every person that if they talked favorably about Sanders, they would lose their job. Now, this is what we're dealing with, and the insurgency of Bernie Sanders and the movement of Bernie Sanders, which is larger than Bernie, is scaring the hell out of the Democratic Party. And the tension in the current Democratic Party, before I go into voter suppression, is very simple. It's the donor class versus the base. And what Bernie Sanders did and Our Revolution and Rainbow Coalition, you know, the Progressive Democrats of America did a great job. I think Conyers and the Progressive Caucus did a great job. Is we started planning very, you know, methodically around 2003 or 2004, how are we going to move the party to the progressive direction? There were several national summits and meetings, and I think we were very successful because it was the Progressive Democrats of America that asked Bernie Sanders to run. So the Democratic Party...
And I want to say, Joel, let me jump in here. Joel, I know you have a hard time hearing me, but since you mentioned the Progressive Democrats of America, we do happen to have their executive director, Alan Hinsky, who's a frequent guest on our show and a good bud of both of us. Alan, you're with us?
I am, Joel. Can you hear me well?
Hey, Brother Alan. I hear both of you very
clearly.
Hey
there. Yes, and what Joel said is correct. We were the people who did that, but all credit goes to then-executive director Tim Carpenter and the team with PDA all around the country at that point, which I was a participating member, but again, the brain trust, Steve Cobble, Tim Carpenter, people like Joel Siegel, you know, that's where the credit goes for that call, drafting Bernie Sanders.
Okay, wonderful. So it's great having you on, Alan. I'm sure you're picking yourself up off the floor from Greg Palast's report here. But Joel, why don't you finish your thought, and then Alan,
sure.
How about you jump in here?
So cool. It's just two tributaries. So I went to the North Carolina State Democratic Party fundraiser, with which I go to so I can maintain my contact within the party. And it was Amy Klobuchar and Bloomberg were the keynote speakers, which didn't surprise me at all. And CNN was there. It was covered. Tom Perez spoke. And I really had this epiphany. I'm like, well, now I see the dissonance in the Democratic Party is the two wings, the progressive wing, which Alan Minsky is, you know, talk about a dynamic executive director of the PDA and one of the greatest leaders in our country. I hope everyone remembers the name Alan Minsky. I met Alan in Los Angeles, and we have bro love, and you know, and but the donor class has way too much power, and what the donor base that's progressive has to do is come together, assess our movement, and figure out whether it's Bernie the president or post-Bernie, how do we have more critical mass and power and influence than the donor class? That's one point. The second point, in terms of the many years the Republican Party has consciously, the far right of the Republican Party, has consciously stripped and flipped the vote. That's from Harvey Wasserman. And I'm going to quickly go through how they do it. The first way they did it was they issued voter ID as mandatory, which we never had before, that you had to show a voter ID to vote. And a lot of people on the far right say, well, you know, you need a ID to get, you know, you need your driver's license to show different things. Well, the difference is there was nothing, there was no preparation for people who were poor, who didn't have transportation, who didn't have the money. There was no plan to get the ID to people because many of the Republicans knew that very poor white African-American students, you know, they couldn't get to the DMV. They knew that. And then in Texas, for example, if you have a student ID, you can't use that to go vote. But if you have a hunting or fishing ID, you can vote. So this is a, I call it, you know, voter apartheid, right? This is insanity. Then they do what's called voter purging. So let's say the California Party sends Adam Minsky a letter that looks like, you know, something from, you know, that you would throw away, right, from Kmart. And if he doesn't fill it out, oh, well, he didn't vote in the last election or two election. We don't have any information, so we're going to cross him off the list. Well, guess what we have found? 17 million people purged totally since 2014. And a large percentage of African-American students, Asian Pacific Americans, Latinos. And this is how they're going to win their elections, is through stealing and cheating. Then they put the oldest voting machines in minority districts and student districts that they know are going to break down. They know that they're going to break down. That's one of the reasons why you have all these long lines. Then in Texas, I just got off the phone with Domingo Garcia, who's the president of LULAC. They closed over 400 polling places. In Alabama, Bernard Simelton, the former president of the NAACP, told me that what they did there was they closed down the DMVs, the Department of Motor Vehicles, in the black communities, so they could not get a voter ID. So welcome to, you know, Jim Crow, the new Confederacy. This is their tactics. And then there's the cross-check tactic, where they'll say, Joel Siegel, okay, there's a Joel Siegel in North Carolina, and there happens to be a Joel Siegel in New York, and then the Secretary of State go over the list, and then they purge names called cross-check. And it just turns out that when they did it in Georgia, they made a mistake with over 100,000 voters. I think over 400,000 people were purged. Now, what country are we living in, man? Are we living in a banana republic, or are we living in America? And I'll close by saying that here's the good news. April 5th and 6th, Jesse Jackson, Rainbow Coalition, PUSH, Barbara Online, Transformative Justice Coalition, along with several different organizations, are going to have a national summit, and we're going to talk about how we're going to fight back on voter suppression, voter purging, how do we dramatically increase voter registration, getting out the vote. This will be the first time in my lifetime we're going to have a coordinated approach to both fighting voter suppression, the stripping of the machines, and ramping up the vote, because what Stacey Abrams has done in Georgia, she's dramatically increased voter registration to mitigate those who are being purged and suppressed. But there has to be funding. We need 15, 16 organizations like hers. And funding is going to be crucial, and organization and people working together, because if we do not come together soon and come up with a plan of action to save democracy, we're going to be in a dictatorship and fascist right-wing Republicans and corporate Democrats for a long time. But I'm optimistic, because if we work together, I think we can win.
Alan Minsky,
I just threw down the mic.
That was great. From Joel Siegel, from Jammin, and so many other organizations. Alan Minsky, Executive Director of Progressive Democrats of America. What do you got to say?
Well, first of all, Joel Siegel is one of the great, I mean, you know, people should know about people like Joel Siegel. Joel Siegel is the person who wrote the initial Medicare for All bill, which came out of John Conyers' office, where he was an institution, just as the Conyers' office was a factory for some of the best progressive legislation and ideas, and, you know, really provides the backbone. Conyers' office was going to be a conduit producing all this fantastic legislation that makes up pretty much the backbone of the very now well-known Bernie Sanders public policy platforms.
Thank you.
And so Joel is just a, you know, Capitol Hill legend. He's down in his home state of North Carolina again. And I know he's a wicked bass player, and I hear he's an unbelievable basketball player, too. So, you know, people should know about the great work of people like Joel Siegel, and then learn about his killer crossover, too. So, you know, I think the election suppression and voter suppression stuff is so real in this country, and it has so much dimension to it. It is a foundation of the distrust that the American people have in not just the election system, but of the entire political process. And of course, there's a big catch-22. What's the catch-22? The people in charge of fixing it are basically a corrupt political class. Obviously, much worse with the Republicans for targeted voter suppression is, I mean, they know how to do the system so there's no voter suppression. That's how the system works in Republican districts. So there's proof that it can be done well, even in the United States of America. But the Democratic Party has also got a degree of complicity, too. And, boy, we had a mess out here in L.A. County. I'm sure you heard about that. And then what happened in Texas, and I don't think it necessarily was, obviously I'm a partisan for Bernie Sanders, especially between him and Joe Biden. But, you know, the communities where the vote was messed up in Texas because of the closing of the polls was hitting Latino communities, student-dense areas, but also African-American communities. So it's not like this is singularly something that would have benefited Bernie Sanders, but it has to be fixed. And we as a society, the idea that we are, you know, stealing the right to vote from communities of color in 2020 is just one of the saddest things you can imagine. I mean, given centrality of voting rights in the 1960s, civil rights struggles, and how, you know, those struggles in the 50s and into the 60s are, of course, celebrated as one of the greatest, the very greatest episodes of American history. And here we are now, 55 years later, and it's just progress, what progress, right? But I want to talk a little bit about the Sanders race, if that's okay, Harvey. Is that good with you?
Yes, please. And we're getting a little scratchy noises. I'm not sure where it's coming from, but we can maybe stabilize our microphone.
I think it's from me. Okay, I think it's
Joel,
from another, another line.
With your phone there.
I'm on mute.
Okay. All right, then. So let's do this, because let me do a quick one here. Just, you know, the United States Constitution really doesn't say much about voting. It was up to the states. Most of the states in the beginning had property qualifications, and most of the states did not allow black men to vote. Ironically, women could vote in New Jersey until 1808. Somebody should write a book about the cancellation of the women's right to vote in New Jersey. It was largely because there were Quakers there. The property qualifications were mostly gone by 1860. The 15th Amendment allegedly guaranteed the right to vote regardless of race, but we know a century of Jim Crow suppression followed on that. Alan, you mentioned the great upheavals of the 1960s. They were very successful in bringing blacks into the voting fold, and the counterattack came in the early 1970s from the Nixon administration with the drug war. The key book on that is the New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander, a professor of law at Ohio State, who showed how the war on drugs was used basically to suppress not only the black vote, but the participation of black men in the political process. More than 40 million people went to prison during the drug war, which is still not over. It's just now winding down with the legalization of pot. And so in order to find another way to suppress the progressive people of color and youth vote in this country has been to do what the Democrats do in the primaries, as they did in 2016, to prevent Bernie Sanders from being nominee, and as they're doing again in 2020. And so now it's long lines, breaking down machines, provisional ballots, voter ID, all the other stuff that the Republicans do in November that the Democrats do in the primary season to bring us Hillary Clinton and now Joe Biden. So with that summary, Alan Minsky, why don't you jump ahead and remember that Alan has been a major force in the Sanders campaign and in Progressive Democrats of America, bringing people out to vote and into the political process. So take it from there, Joel. Alan, please.
Well, first of all, I want to say that you mentioned the war on drugs. And if there is one member of the Democratic Party nationally who led the Democratic effort to expand and make even more just extreme the war on drugs, who was that, Joel and Harvey?
It was Joe Biden, obviously, and he is unrepentant.
That's correct. Yeah.
And as I said, so, I have to admire the Democratic Party. You have to admire, because we do have a president he's not the president. We have an occupant of the White House who's running for a second term who has dementia, very clearly. And so I think the Democrats decided that to make it fair, that they should also nominate somebody with dementia, clearly Joe Biden. But go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think that should be lost on people. And I want to say, too, now that you can, you know, maybe that makes you recall how the horrible memories you have of Joe Biden arguing vociferously for the Iraq War, suppressing the voice of Anita Hill, and on and on and on. I mean, those were very high-profile moments in Joe Biden's career in American mass media, front of center stage.
there's a lot more there if you dig into the record. It's pretty horrible. I want to talk about what's going on right now around Bernie Sanders, and because this thing happened so quickly. From a week ago, we were in a phase in which Sanders was poised to run up a delegate lead on Super Tuesday. All the polls were saying that this was going to happen. And while Joe Biden, it was thought, might squeak out a victory in South Carolina, his moribund campaign was never going to come back. And now that the tables have turned, but it is true. By the way, you know, people talk about Sanders' result not being very good or it not being short of expectations on Tuesday. He did, of course, finish first or second in every race. And when all the California delegates are added in, it looks like it's going to be pretty much neck and neck in delegate count. And if you go further into the calendar with the primary season, there's some good states out there, very good states for Bernie Sanders still. But there's no denying that Joe Biden did fantastically. And as such, right now we're in a period where the Michigan primary, the Washington primary, Missouri primary, Mississippi, Idaho, and North Dakota are on the 10th, just a few days away. And this is a make-it-or-break-it moment. If Biden were to maintain the level of momentum he had from South Carolina through to Super Tuesday and continue it through the 10th, he would build up, just off those six states, a considerable delegate lead. And I really want to encourage people out there listening right now to recognize how essential it is for the welfare of American society that that doesn't happen. Here's the reality about progressive politics and organizing at from the localist, the local level, all the way up to the national level in the context of the United States of America. The most engaged the public becomes in the political discourse by an order of magnitude, and this is not a good thing, but it's just the truth, is the presidential election. And right now, the Bernie Sanders movement has propelled the policies, really, of not only the New Deal of FDR, but the Great Society of Lyndon Johnson, back into the political consciousness of the United States of America. A defeat by, you know, is Joe Biden beating Bernie Sanders? Does anybody believe that? No. This is the coordinated energies of the Democratic Party's establishment with the empty suit of Joe Biden as the person whose name is on the ballot. And they are going to, they were unified in one purpose, which is defeating Sanders and not allowing anything in the Democratic Party that really was for the welfare of the people, the welfare of the planet, and not just the people who fund the Democratic Party. And what can happen in, even with this uptick in all the energy around the left, if Sanders were to lose quickly right now to Joe Biden, the despair that would hit all these young people all over the country who are so committed to the Bernie Sanders movement, it might be a very, very damaging blow. I hate to make negative arguments, but I do think, Harvey and Joel, that that's a real danger. And if you believe in just anything that makes up an American society in which there's honest social justice across the board on all issues, where we're responsible stewards for the climate, where we actually address not just wealth inequality, which is out of control, things like homelessness, but also the history of structural racism in this country and what it would mean for us to become the country that truly celebrates in a more equitable way with greater justice the beautiful diversity of peoples that make up the United States of America. We do not want to see the Sanders campaign lose right now. So this is a huge moment for everybody to see that, to, you know, sort of clear their mind of all the noise that the horse race has produced, see what Joe Biden stands for, see what Bernie Sanders stands for. You know, if you think he's not going to get his policy programs passed, okay, yeah, we can talk about that. But the vision of America that's being put forward, if that is suffocated in the next week or the next 2 weeks, the damage that's going to be done to the movements for positive political change in our society, don't kid yourself. It's going to have a severe effect. But the Sanders campaign reviving itself quickly, having a long discussion about the future of the Democratic Party over the next 2 months, that is going to be beautiful, folks. So that's my election.
All right,
here, Harvey.
Well, we have that's Alan Minsky from Progressive Democrats of America. I want to mention my own
book, The People's Spiral of U.S. History, which is directly on point for all of this. And, you know, I just read a piece about what really happened in Massachusetts. There is absolutely no way on earth. I mean, I'm from Massachusetts. I lived there for many, many years. There's no way on earth that Joe Biden beat Bernie Sanders in Massachusetts. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what the hell is that about?
Not possible.
Can you elaborate?
It's about voter theft. Think about depression. It's about flipping electronic machines. I mean, that's what it's about.
Well, I've been all over this country over these past few months. I was in Iowa. You know how much enthusiasm I saw for Joe Biden's candidacy?
Zero.
You know, zero. I was trying to come up with a creative metaphor. Squat, nothing. You know, it's non-existent. And the idea that...
So I think it's very important, as we go forward, Joel and Alan and all you listeners, that we make sure that people understand what's going on here. This is an object lesson. You have a fascist dictator in the White House who is seeking to make himself president for life. And you have an opposition party which is seeking to suppress the only source of opposition that can prevent that from happening. And they're using this empty suit, Joe Biden, as a puppet to deny the nomination to the social movement that is coming out of the new generation, that is the only source that we have to save this country and this planet, because we all know that we're at the tipping point or beyond, over the tipping point on survival. Oh, my God. We're done. We've got to do this again. Alan Minsky, Joel Siegel, Greg Pallas, thank you so much. This obviously is to be continued. Keep the faith, all you brothers and sisters.
See you next week in
Solutopia. Okay, man.
Solutopia, Solutopia, Solutopia.